Today's webcast contains certain forward-looking statements within the meaning of federal securities laws with respect to Workhorse Group, including statements related to the amendment of our articles of incorporation in Nevada and its potential impact on the company's ability to obtain financing to build our offering for commercial and aerospace vehicles. Forward-looking statements are predictions, projections, and other statements about future events based on current expectations and assumptions, and as a result are subject to risks and uncertainties. Many factors could cause actual future events to differ materially from the forward-looking statements made on today's webcast, including but not limited to changes in voting and the actual vote counts on the day of the annual meeting, the availability of and need for capital, and the risks and factors and other uncertainties regarding the company's business, which are described in the risk factor sections of the company's annual report, which is filed on Form 10-K with the Securities and Exchange Commission for the December 31st, 2022 calendar year, which was filed on March 1st, 2023, and the company's quarterly report on Form 10-Q for the fiscal quarter ending June 30th, 2023, filed with the SEC on August 14th, 2023. These filings identify and address other important risks and uncertainties that could cause actual events and results to differ materially from those contained in the forward-looking statements. The company assumes no obligation and does not intend to update or revise these forward-looking statements. And with that, let's now turn the call over to Rick Cobb. Rick?
Thanks, Dan. Good morning, everybody. And good morning, special good morning to my fellow Workhorse stockholders. Thank you for joining us today. As you know, this is a critically important time for us here at Workhorse. As we continue to advance our product portfolio roadmaps, we are evaluating several financing options to help Workhorse build a bridge to its next phase of growth and value creation. The only way for these financing options to be available to us are going to if our stockholders vote for the proposal to increase Workhorse authorized shares ahead of the special meeting of stockholders, which is just a few days away on August 28th. Over the last several weeks, we've been engaged with many of our stockholders. We have respect reviews. We appreciate how sophisticated, knowledgeable, and I'll say passionate you are about Workhorse. Thanks for your continued interest and support of our company. We also recognize that you want to have as much information as possible as we approach the special meeting next Monday. Our goal of this webcast today is to address your questions and explain about the proposal, our business, and how we are working on behalf of stockholders to rebuild Workhorse and create long-term shareholder value. We invited your questions last week, and we were quite impressed by the number of people submitting questions. Well over 100 questions were received. We intend to answer as many questions as we can. We received a number of duplicate answers, so we combined some of those, and we'll try to get through all those. Stan's going to read the questions, and then Bob and I will take turns answering the questions, depending on what the question is. Before we jump into Q&A, I want to give you my perspective on the importance of the vote. I've had the opportunity to hold executive leadership positions at multiple companies across the global industry over my 30-year automotive career. And I've been through some of the toughest times ever, the 2008 and 2009 global recession, and the COVID period of 2019 and 20. We understand what tough times are in the auto industry. When I joined Workhorse as CEO on August 21st, some of my experience was sought after because we knew we had some challenging situations here at Workhorse. I knew the company had incredible potential, but we had to address some legacy issues. We've talked about those very openly with our shareholders over the last few years, and we put 95% of those behind us. Since then, we have transformed this business, executing a clear strategy to stabilize, fix, and profitably grow Workhorse into a viable commercial EV OEM. Easier said than done. We've revamped our management team. We've revitalized our facilities. We've doubled our engineering staffs. We've advanced our roadmaps with our products, both on the commercial vehicle side and also over on the drone side of the business. We strengthened the company's financial position, giving us the financial flexibility to execute the plan we put together. And I have complete confidence that we're on the right path. Our goal to increase Workhorse share authorizations is to protect our shareholders and create long-term value. We're looking to issue the shares we need so we can continue to fund our operations and our future growth of the company. Our ask of you is very simple. We need your support for the vote, and we encourage you to vote as soon as possible. We intend to use the financing we raise to strengthen our business and drive forward on our plans. Revamp leadership team is laser focused on executing new designs, ramping up production, profitably growing our revenue, and creating value for all stakeholders. We will use the capital to expand and advance our product roadmaps. We are launching 3 new vehicles in 12 months and 9 vehicles over 3 years. That requires investment in our plants, in our people, in our suppliers, and with our dealers and distributors. We're ramping up production of the W4CC and W750. As we said earlier, those vehicles are now in production. Beginning next week, we start our first official production of the W56. To date, we've only done program builds or test vehicles. We're now starting production next Monday. We have the parts all due in today. We'll be all sorted out this weekend, and we'll start our production next week. And then we'll start the W next later on in this year, but it won't launch until 25-26. As I said, the W56 chassis is rolling down the line next week, and we're excited to continue that ramp-up production throughout the month of September and into October. In addition, we continue to invest in supplier tooling and assembly equipment and painting equipment as we move into full production of the W56 step van, hopefully by the end of September and early October. Right now, we're at a point where there's a funding gap in order to continue with our plans and grow the company. While our first wave of new products are finally ready for the market, we have a full product line. We need to have a full product lineup to be successful long term. Think about the auto companies you know or the truck companies. They don't live on one vehicle only. They have multiple platforms and vehicles, and they've got to refresh those vehicles every 2 or 3 years. That's exactly what we're creating here, a real automotive OEM company. In addition, the overall adoption of EV technologies is going slower across the industry than was forecast by industry analysts. Big factor in that is the charging infrastructure or the lack thereof. Also, I'd say there's some people who are a little bit shy of how electric vehicles will work, especially the commercial vehicle space in terms of range anxiety and payload capacity. They've had some failures in the past. That's why we've been so hard on ourselves in making sure our trucks are well-designed, tested, and ready for production before we put them out in the market. We don't want to get a truck out there that doesn't work. We've had other people in the industry do that. We did that ourselves with the C1000. That's in the past. We're focused on the future. So we've been very strategic on how we cleaned up our balance sheet when we first got here and financed our efforts today. We've been good stewards of your capital. The financing options we are looking at today now require us to be able to issue more shares. As we mentioned, these include raising money through convertible debt. But we can't access that financing without being able to issue more equity. We set up a website. You've likely seen www.votewkhs.com with information on how to vote on the share authorization proposal. We encourage you to visit it and learn how to get your vote for the proposal today. With that, I turn it over to Stan to kick off the Q&A portion, and Bob and I look forward to answering your questions.
Thanks, Rick. As Rick mentioned, we received over 100 questions. It was 113 to be exact. Many were duplicates because there's a common alignment, so we bucketed those, and I'll be going through your questions almost verbatim in y'all's words, the shareholders who sent those in, and now I'm going to ask Rick the questions. So let's start with number one. In the category of additional authorized share or use of proceeds, the first question is, and I think, Rick, I'll throw this one to you.
Okay.
What is Workhorse's plan with the additional 200 million authorized shares and the proceeds you intend to raise from the share issuance?
Well, Sam, we need the additional CapEx, or capital, as you say, to fund our next phase of execution, primarily on the product engineering side of the house, on our next wave of vehicles, and to run our day-to-day business. We have working capital needs now. We have inventory coming out. We have finished goods, et cetera. Pay our people, pay our suppliers, develop our products. From a position of strength, we're exploring several financing options, but those options will only be available to us if we shareholders vote for the proposal. Primarily, we'll use the proceeds to finance and advance our expanded product roadmaps, continue to support our aerospace business that goes into production, and continue to invest in the supplier tooling, assembly, and paint equipment as we move into production of the W56. As we said, we'll plan to use the financing towards working capital, operating expenses, and some capital expenditure needs.
Okay, thanks. So Bob, one of the questions that came in was, why did you wait so long to raise funds?
Well, Stan, we've been raising funds throughout 2023. Needing more shares is different. We have the resources to run the business in the near term, and now we're looking for financing from our front foot and from a position of strength.
Okay. Bob, I'll throw this one to you too. Will these additional shares be counted as voting shares while sitting in our ATM? apparatus, people are worried about the board controlling over 50% of the voting shares.
Until the shares are actually issued, nobody votes them. In the ATM, they are not issued and non-voting. We're not giving voting control from the company to the board. This is about maintaining flexibility. We are only asking for authorization to issue new shares. We aren't issuing them. The proceeds are not going to the board of directors or management. As we mentioned, any new shares would be used to help us obtain new financing so we can fund our execution and growth plans.
Okay. On that same thread, Bob, you said that the intent is to sell the shares in the open market as needed. How many shares will you sell at any given time?
We can't really speculate on the specific number of shares we will issue at any given time. We're evaluating a range of finance options. The goal is to fund the business while protecting our shareholders and enabling us to create the most value for them. As always, we will be prudent about the nature of the financing pursuit to ensure it is the best interest of all stockholders.
Okay. And I think another related question here, Bob, for you is, we heard there are different types of offerings the company could do, such as selling restricted shares to current stockholders at discount, to offering preferred equity shares. What options are you considering?
Well, the only shares we can issue from this request once authorized are common shares. As we said, the goal is to ensure we get the financing we need while protecting our shareholders, enable us to create the most value for them.
Okay. So Rick, I think I'll turn to you because this is a follow-up to the questions just asked, Bob. Can you definitely state that the funds raised from the share issuance will not be used for any of the following: to facilitate a sale or buyout, to facilitate taking the company private, for executive or board compensation?
Yes, Dan, as I've already mentioned, we fully intend to use the proceeds from the share issuances to run the business. Product development, tooling, capital investment, pay for our engineering team. As I said, we need to expand our product roadmaps. As you guys know, the W56 will come in three different versions, three different links, and we got some more work to do over there. So the shareholders representatives, are your representatives are the board of directors, and any transaction require their approval. We have no intention to sell the company or take it private as part of this process. As a general matter, if we wanted to do something like that, facilitate a sale or buyout, we would not be looking to increase the number of shares. That's the last thing we want to do. So.
Okay. Bob, I want to throw it back to you because there are several questions that came in about why are you asking to authorize 200 million shares instead of a smaller amount? It doesn't seem like you should need this many to reach 2025 when you've stated you expect to be break even. Couldn't we authorize 100 million to get us through 2024, then authorize more if needed and warranted at that time?
Well, Stan, we've considered a number of different options in terms of financing and the number of additional shares we need to issue. In addition, the process to get authorization is time consuming and costly. We believe it's better for stockholders if we do this once now than focus our time and resource on building and selling commercial EVs and drones.
So another follow-up to that one, Bob, is how big of a hit will the issuance of the additional shares be to the shares I own now? Will increasing the number of authorized shares of Workhorse Common Stock further dilute the current share price?
Well, as of the record date, there were 210,793,111 shares of Workhorse Common Stock issued and outstanding under our current authorization of 250 million shares. We're looking to increase the number of authorized shares of Common Stock to 450 million shares. If the company issues additional shares, the ownership interest of holders of our common stock will be diluted accordingly. We take any action like this incredibly seriously, and we wouldn't do it if it wasn't necessary, and we didn't think it was ultimately good for our stockholders in the long term.
Okay. A follow-up on that, Bob. How will stockholders see value creation with dilution, given the stock is trading at multi-year lows?
Simply put, we need our stockholders to help us build a bridge to long-term growth and stockholder value. We need to be able to issue shares to get financing so we can fund our execution of our growth plans. We're confident the important work underway and the progress we are making across our EV portfolio will deliver value to shareholders over the long term.
Okay. A bunch of questions came in, Bob, because in the filings that were made as part of the process, the proxy statement as well as the S3 statement, why does the company want to have options of selling shares directly or indirectly to those who are shorting the stock?
Well, on August 21st, we filed a prospectus supplement to our Form S3, removing references to all short sales transactions, as we do not contemplate them in our plans for distribution. We intend to obtain new financing to advance our commercial EV product roadmap, support our aero business, and fund our operations.
Okay. Rick, I'm going to throw this one to you.
All right.
Why does the vote referendum not have a clause saying that Workhorse will buy back shares once profitable?
Well, first of all, our board regularly reviews our capital allocation priorities, and I'm sure that they'll in the future they'll consider implementing a stock buyback or capital return program in the future. But our clear focus is first, we need to launch our company. We need to design, build, and sell trucks and drones to generate revenue in this company to get to a point where we have positive free cash flow. When we do that, then we have more options. I've been around that before. It takes a while to get a company up and running. So back in my days at American Axle, we took 3 or 4 years, spending over $500 million of capital a year before we could actually get the company up and running so we could return share to our customers. We went from a penny a share to $42 a share in the stock.
Okay. How does the recent stock performance affect the proposal, Rick?
Hey, of course, we see the daily fluctuations in our stock price. Some are explainable, some are not. And there's plenty of reasons for those dynamics. Some are insider control and some are not. But our stock price doesn't affect the proposal. We're doing what is needed right now so we can execute on our business plans. We believe we can create long-term value as we advance and expand our product roadmaps to sell trucks and drones.
Okay. Rick, if you don't receive stockholder approval for the proposal, what are your plans to raise capital to fund the business?
Well, that'd be disappointing, but we're not going to speculate right now. What I will say is that if it doesn't, the proposal ultimately does not go through, it will limit our financing options to the detriment of all of our stockholders, all of us. So we encourage all of our stockholders to get their votes in and to vote for the proposal.
Okay. Bob, I'm going to throw this one to you. Does Workhorse have a plan to reverse split shares of common stock in the event the company becomes deficient per NASDAQ's listing requirements? Does Workhorse have a plan in place to prevent the listing on the NASDAQ that does not require a reverse split of any kind?
Well, as Rick said, we are aware of our stock price, and we're also aware of the NASDAQ listing requirements. We continue to monitor it and prepare accordingly.
Okay. I'm going to go to a new bucket now, which is about financials and the guidance that we most recently updated with our earnings. So, Rick, I'll throw this to you. What's your confidence level on achieving the lower end of the revised guidance at $65 million, given the significant sales required despite delays to date?
Yeah, Bob and I sit down with our sales teams, both on the CB side and the drone side, every month and go through their perspectives. We actually get an update every week. Every Monday we get an update. And so we think we have a solid plan to meet or beat it. We've got about 170 W4CC units in our finished goods right now, ready to sell. We're ramping up the W750 production. We've already doubled from 1 to 2 a week, and we're moving towards 4 or 5 a week. We have multiple demos now out in the fields with customers, and they're getting good positive reviews, and hopefully we turn those demos into real orders and firm orders. And again, we're launching the W56 next week. We have 6 of our 12 dealers now signed up and through the certification process, and we're close to signing up another 2 or 3 dealers. And of course, when you sign up a dealer, they get stocking orders, anywhere from 10 to 30 trucks, depending on how many dealer sites they have. And we hope to have those signed up yet this quarter. We have finished goods. We've got production capability now, finally, after 2 years, and we can build and sell trucks. We also have some drones out in the field being demoed right now, and we hope to get some more drone orders yet this quarter. We're also working with the government. We've done a very good job over the drone business in the last 2 years, exercising our drones, and we're getting more and more confident. We're getting more confidence with the government that will help support us going forward. So the one challenge we have, we talked about at the last earnings call, is we don't have the HVIP vouchers out in California. I'm personally going out there next week myself to meet with the CARB officials and CalSTAR officials, see if we get that resolved. It's really an administrative issue. It's kind of bureaucratic. We have orders out there. We have trucks in Indiana. We want to figure out how to get the paperwork so we can get those trucks shipped out there and serve the needs of the California market, especially with the pending California clean fleet rules that take effect next year. People are going to start buying electric trucks. They have to by law. So we wouldn't put out the guidance if we weren't confident or didn't have a plan to get there. I'll caveat that with the risk of the HVIP vouchers, which could be 60 or 80 trucks.
Let's drill down a little bit further, because one of the shareholders asked, can you please explain how the 2023 revenue goals can reasonably be achieved given the revenue miss on your last earnings call?
Yeah, our second quarter results were lower than we expected, primarily because of some of the ramp-up challenges we had in W750, but primarily because of the HVIP voucher availability. So once we get that resolved, I think we do it. We got 3 clear actionable priorities for the remainder of the year. 1, secure the HVIP voucher process in California. That's a critical enabler for us. sell the W4CCs based on input from dealer needs we've had in the last few weeks. We think we can do so. And obviously ramp up the W750 production and then get W56 going down the line next week and all the way to step van. So by the end of the year, we'll have full float 200 to 300 W4CCs, 50 W750s, and close to 100 to 130 W56. That will more than cover the $65 million minimum guidance we have out there. So.
Okay. Bob, a question about what are the drivers of revenue growth and what is the best use of the cash on Workhorse's balance sheet? Will Workhorse consider some share buyback at these low levels?
Well, the drivers of revenue growth are going to be vehicle and drone sales. We're looking to sell the W4CCs we have in inventory, ramp up production of the sales for W750s, launch the W56 chassis in August and the step van in September, and get demos in the hands of our key customers. The best use for cash is to fund our growth plans and invest in the company. We are not buying back shares right now.
Okay. All right, Rick, what cost-cutting measures are being put in place to reduce the cash burn at a time when the economy is weak and expenses remain elevated?
Yeah, in terms of cash, the first priority is selling the trucks we have in finished goods inventory. I think, Bob, we have $25 to $30 million in inventory.
Correct.
We purchased from Green Power, we processed through the plant, and it's sitting waiting to go. So that's our number one source of cash. Second, we are pretty cash and consulting, cash CapEx spending and consulting heavy in the first half of the year as we were doing the development of the W56, tooling up suppliers, getting the plant ready to go and putting the assembly lines in for the drone business. That's gonna slow down. It has already slowed down in the second, so that's gonna help us out. We're also looking at all of our spends, obviously, right? So we've also already talked to Green Power about slowing the delivery of the next tranche of Green Power chassis. We think we have sufficient product on the ground in Union City, either finished goods in the plant or raw material status, to cover the needs we have in the balance of the year. And we're working with them to make sure we have enough trucks going ready for next year. So we always take a look at how we're gonna control variable spending over the course of the year without impacting our ability to design and launch our products that won't impact our sales efforts or our future product development efforts. So again, we expect our cash burn rate to slow down and decrease in the rest of 2023. And we're absolutely committed to making sure we demonstrate a disciplined capital spend process as we execute our go forward plans. I've seen plenty of examples in the auto industry where people pull back on their spending or slash their spending. It only leads to more trouble. You got to fight your way through that and go forward to grow a company. So.
Okay. Rick, another one for you. If the proposal for more shares is approved, can you give a firm answer on the number of trucks that will be sold by the end of the year 2023?
Yeah, I'd love to give you a firm number. But there's a lot of factors that are, some are in our control, some are outside of our control, right? We don't control customer demand. We don't control voucher approvals. We don't control infrastructure spending or the connection to the grid. So we have our targets. We need to sell 60 to 800 trucks in the third quarter and about over 300, 350 by the end of the year to make our $65 to $85 million guidance. Based on the conversations we've had with customers, we think we can do that. Again, we don't control some of the things outside of our control. But where we can sell trucks, we're going to sell the hell out of trucks.
Okay. I'm going to go to another category of questions, guys, production and future development. So, Rick, first question to you. With only $10 million of revenue generated through 8 months, why shouldn't we still consider Workhorse a PowerPoint company, to use your term?
Well, that's a good zinger, and I appreciate it. I'll take that one right in the chin here. So let me tell you why. We have 315 dedicated associates in this company across the aerospace business, commercial vehicle business, and here at headquarters, right? We got over 400,000 square feet of manufacturing space up in Indiana, another 75,000 here in Ohio to build trucks and drones. We got real products, class 4, class 5, class 6, and two types of drones. That's real hard work we put in place in the last few years. So we've learned many lessons along the way. Building products that we think are great that aren't selling right now, we got to figure out that commercial gap between our production and engineering process to the customers. We didn't quite understand some of the interesting challenges we had in terms of manufacturing licenses, et cetera, and getting all the dealer green splits. We have that now. So I think we're going to be ready to go. It's just a matter of time. So,
okay. Rick, moving to another related question. Workhorse seems to have a large management team. Do you currently have enough hands-on assemblers to produce the W56?
Yeah, sure. Up at Union City, we have about 106 employees. 34 of them are salary. That would be your finance team, your HR team, your engineering team, your materials team, your quality team. We have 72 hourly people, either direct or indirect positions. Direct are the people on the assembly line putting the products together, and the balance are either the quality inspectors, the material handlers, or the maintenance. So we have plenty of people to build W56. We're actually in the process of adding 10 to 20 new hourly assemblers in the plant, about 5 per week over the next 4 weeks, and we already have those people lined up. So as we ramp up W56 further, we'll add further staff to the plant, and we think we have the ability to get those people on board. Outside of the plant, remember, when we got here, I think we doubled our engineering staff, both at CV and Aero. We built our own supply chain team. We built our own manufacturing team. When we got here 2 years ago, 100% of our manufacturing engineers were outside consultants. Only had 2 people in supply chain. We're really a supply chain company. We're buying parts from suppliers and assembling them into trucks and drones. You can't run a company with just 2 supply chain people, okay? We didn't have a big finance staff or an HR staff as a public company. We didn't have the systems in place. We have the IT systems. So we've had to build some of that. That's part of being a public company. We have that place, and we have the staff in place to grow to be a large OEM.
Okay. Another question on the plant. What are the working hours of the factories currently? How many people do you have that are building trucks versus people in management positions? Are we utilizing all the empty space in the factory properly?
Yeah, we're set about 4 days a week, 10 hours a day shift on Monday through Thursday. We use Friday for installation of equipment or doing some tweaks, doing some repairs if we need to, as we've learned how to build trucks. Very small crew on the weekends. At Union City, as I said, we have about 106, and that'll ramp up to 150 later on this year. In terms of floor space, about half of the Union City plant is set up for the W56. Got 12 stations for the chassis assembly line, followed by the dyno. The trucks then leave the plant, go down the test track, they come back in if they're gonna have a box put on it. Then we're still putting together the stations to build the cab and the body. It goes right back up the other side of the plant, and we're ready to go. Across from our plant, we leased about 160,000 square foot facility. We've upgraded it. That's where our maintenance is at. It's where we bring our raw materials in, minus batteries. We bring our batteries to a separate place from a safety standpoint. We do bring some parts directly to the assembly line. And we're also right now in the process of installing a new paint line there. It takes up about a third of the warehouse building. All the materials on site to build the paint line, it will be up and running commissioned in October. So the plant has the capacity at Union City with no building expansion to have 1 or 2 more product lines and build up to 10,000 vehicles a year. You can do the math, 10,000 vehicles a year at a sales price of somewhere between $130,000 to $200,000 per truck. That's a lot of revenue. That's what we're building here at Workhorse. We're not building a baby startup. We're building a startup that's going to turn into a real OEM and drive free cash flow. So.
Okay. Well, in that same vein, Rick, once in production, if the demand is there, how quickly will we be able to build a second shift of assemblers?
Right. One of the great things about being up in the Union City is it's a small town, about 8,000 people, and we have access to a good workforce. We already have over 400 applicants that inquired to join the Workhorse team, and we're in the process of screening those and see who's really qualified and wants to come in and work. We're confident in our ability to scale up. It's one of the key questions almost every fleet customer asks us. If we give you our business, can you meet our demand? I was with a customer yesterday. He said, I had orders backlogged for 6 or 12 months from the existing OEMs, not even just for EV products, just for regular production ICE vehicles. He said, we're looking for an EV company that's going to be here and be here long term and can really ramp up and grow with us. We think we can do that. In its heyday, the Union City factory had over 800 people. So almost 10% of the city was employed at workforce. When we got here, I think we had less than 50 people there. That's an example of the devastation that happened across the Midwest as people outsource work down to Mexico or China. We're building a plant back in the heart of the United States of America. It's a great place to work. We've cleaned it up. We've made the great facilities. We've got proper break rooms. We've got the safety features. It's well lit. We got good parking lots. It's secure, fenced in. It's going to be a world-class EV operation here in Heartland.
Okay. Another question there. Rick's latest production update is the beginning of September for the W56. Realistically, how many might roll out of the assembly plant each week by November 1st?
Yeah, we start the launch officially next week. We have a program review every 2 weeks at my level, Bob's level. We gave them the green light go. Our teams told us we're ready from a safety standpoint. We're ready from a quality controls and tooling standpoint. The fixtures are in place for 95% of the assembly line for the chassis line. We got a few more things due in this week. We got quite a few things left to go for the step van, but we think we'll build at least one next week, and then we're going to ramp up based on the availability of parts from our suppliers. Our goal is to have 12 to 15 chassis built over the first 3 or 4 weeks of September, so we're ready to start putting boxes and cabs on when we get our final tooling in there. So it takes time. We're getting to the final engineering designs based on the feedback from the test tracks. We're tweaking that. The suppliers are changing their tooling. We're running those parts off of PPAP, and we're modifying work instructions accordingly. So,
okay. Rick received another question. It said, you've consistently said you can sell every truck you make. Is that still true?
I believe that. And I say that based on not my opinion or my dream. It's based on the feedback we're getting from our dealers. And I'll give you a couple of examples that we had last week from California dealers. One of them told me, if you get those vouchers, I can tell you, I can sell you 15 to 20 W4CCs a month. Do the math, that's 180, 240 trucks alone. Just one dealer in the San Joaquin Valley. He's got multiple opportunities out there. We're going to meet with some of his customers next week. One is a large last mile delivery industrial supplies company. Another one is a moving company that wants to be the very first company in all of California to be 100% green fleet, and they can use our W750 mix, right? The other dealer we just signed up, I think we announced a few weeks ago, Western Truck. They're down in the LA County area. They said they have numerous quotes that have come in from government-funded agencies who have the money that are getting ahead of the curve for the clean fleet. They want to buy EV trucks. He said, Rick, you get us trucks, we'll sell trucks. So we have meetings with both dealers next week and with multiple customers. Again, I'll be in California next week to help try to resolve this HBIP issue, to meet with some of the dealers, to meet with some of the customers firsthand and really get some feedback. But we have strong demand. And right now, based on the CARB rules as they go into effect, California is the mother load. That's where we need to be successful. That's where we can have trucks. And we've already got three dealers up in California, so they can sell trucks out there. So.
Okay. A very specific question came in. Did you redesign the W56 so the brackets do not break during driving tests?
Absolutely so. Hey, one of the reasons we put these trucks through such a rigorous test, and they should be, is they're designed to be last 15 to 20 years, which is the expectation of people like UPS and FedEx. This is not like a car that you or I would buy that we drive for 3 or 5 years. This is not a big Class A truck that someone like Penske Logistics or a Ryder truck holds for 3 to 6 years. These are trucks that are built that make 100 to 150 stops a day, and they've got to do that in hot weather, cold weather, nice weather, stormy weather like Cincinnati today, over 15 to 20 years. We're testing the hell out of our trucks. And yes, we've had a few break as part of the test. In fact, that's, I think I told you, I went up personally to go to the test track to understand just how hard that test is. And let me tell you, it's a jaw-rattling test. Our trucks are performing very well, as our engineers have been very quick to make some design changes. Our suppliers tool up quickly. We've had trucks turned around in less than 72 hours, taken from Navistar's test track in the north part of Indiana, brought back to Cincinnati, old parts torn off, new parts back on in less than 48 hours, and back on the test track, and we're back up and running. And even as late as last couple of weeks, we've had some issues that came up well into over 150 to 160,000 miles of real-world testing, well past the warranty, but we're making sure our tests, our trucks are bulletproof. That's what we're doing. So,
okay. I'm going to shift to a different product here, but same product focus. Have you already delivered W750s to potential customers for demo? What's the current production ability of Workhorse for W750s in terms of units over time?
Yeah, great question, Stan. We're really happy with the W750. It was a hell of a truck to design and get into production. It took us longer than we thought. We have 5 trucks operating every day on stables, which Stan runs every day. We're getting really good feedback from our drivers there. They're performing magnificently. Typically coming back to the shop at the end of the day with still 50% of their charge. Plug them in, we're 100% charged the next day. That's one of the great things. One of our big potential customers asked if he can personally go visit the stables and stalls and see what we're doing there, because he's got to do that and he crosses his fleet. And again, remind you that we're doing that with the FedEx ground route in Lebanon, Ohio. So we have a W750. It started to test on Monday this week with a large merchandiser on the East Coast. So far, so good. The feedback I got from one of our dealers last night that W750 is by far outperforming all the other trucks on the test right now. So we also have demo trucks now finally in the hands of our sales teams, both East Coast and the West Coast, and getting out to dealers and fleets and showing those trucks. And we actually had one over in Columbus, Indiana yesterday where I gave a presentation, and we had probably 120 people at an industry conference, mostly suppliers, but also some customers, like Ryder Truck were there yesterday, driving our W56 and our W750. So our capacity's ramped up on W750 from one week, I should say, to two, and we're working towards a goal of four or five. And we'll be able to build about 50 to 60 of those trucks this year. So.
Okay. All right. I'm going to shift a little bit still into the facilities question. With all the money being put into the factory, has any gone towards automating some of the building process in order to be able to ramp up production? If not, why not? If we aim to ramp production, how do we intend to do that,
Rick? Yeah, that's a great question. So let me say we're blessed with the fact that when we got here, we had a facility that had good bones, what I call good infrastructure. We had good walls, we had good roofs, we didn't have leaks, we had good utility connections, we have excess power to the plants, we have lots of land. So that's really great. That's the good news. The bad news was the inside was old equipment, tired, dirty, unlit, disorganized, not well maintained. We've cleaned that up. I ask any one of you, if you want to come up, let us know. We'll host you up at the plant. We're happy to show off our plant. We're really proud of it. So we had a potential customer come in this week. Stan hosted them up there. They've been here 3 years ago, and they were shocked at what the difference is. And I can't wait to get some of the big fleets who are here 2 or 3 years ago and show them. They'll see that we're a real company here. So we've expanded the footprint up there, again, up from 200,000 square feet to over 400,000. We leased the battery building. We put the test track in. We're in good shape up there. So right now, at the stage we're at right now, we don't need broad automation or sophisticated automation. The volumes are too low. Our tack times will be around 21 minutes. If you were up in a big automotive OEM and you're building a truck a minute, then you need automation. We're building one every 21 minutes, and we have plenty of time. We also have most of the parts we can handle with what we call jigs or fixtures to pick up, put the parts in place. The one place we're going to have automations is in October. Our automatic ground vehicles will come in, and they'll move the station from Station 10 up through Station 120. By Station 120, now we have the batteries in, we have the axles in, we have the steering in, we can drive the truck off the line onto the dyno. So that's the one area where we're going to do that, okay? In the short startup of the ramp, we can push those trucks with five or six people down the line here. So we may automate down the line in areas where either quality requirements or safety requirements dictate we do so. I've done that in every plant I've had around the world, whether it's in Mexico, Romania, China, wherever, okay? So today we only need to have our employees. They have all the right tools. We got all the right safety devices in the plant. We have all the quality control processes. Really critical in the assembly process is the torquing of the nuts and bolts. Well over 50% of the warranty costs in the automotive industry in general are because people don't torque the nuts and bolts correctly, and things get loose and fall off. So again, we're not a class one or two automotive high volume plant at 60 jobs an hour. We're basically looking at about, you know, every three trucks an hour basically will be all built. So,
okay. Rick, what are Workhorse's plans to enter the civilian truck market?
Yeah, we don't have any plans to enter the civilian truck market. Okay. That's not where we play. That's for the big boys like General Motors, Ram Truck, Toyota, Ford, et cetera. So we're talking about building class 4 to 6 work trucks in three versions, strip chassis, cab chassis, or full step vans. Different variations and lengths, different classes, class 4, 5, 6.
Okay. Did the plant pause production? If not, what are the current production rates of the W4CC and W750? Also, how many finished W4CCs are there in inventory? Based on the past rates provided, it seems like there should be a lot more finished inventory.
Yeah, right now we're sitting on 175 W4CCs of last night. We're building those right now, two a day rather than four a day. We did pause production for a few weeks to move some people over to some of the production of the W56 program builds and to help on the W56 launch back in May and June. So. But right now we have sufficient inventory at 175 to meet our current customer demands. We have another 125 trucks on site that we can process through the plant, be in production and out the door by mid-December. Regarding the W750, we've gone from 1 a week to 2 a week, which is, okay, not very fast, but okay, we're getting there. But I can tell you every truck's getting just a little bit better. Our guys are becoming much more efficient in how they put the truck together. And we're hoping to ramp that up to four or five trucks a week by the end of the year. Sometime late October, December. So,
okay. Rick, you've discussed meeting with the big three of the last mile delivery sector. How come we barely received any updates? Why haven't contracts been struck?
Those relationships take time. Some of those relationships were made before I even got here. To be quite honest, at least two of them were very strained. One of them said they had no interest in workforce trucks. They didn't think they were going to be capable. That's been cleaned up. Now they're coming back in to see us. I have a phone call with one of their top leaders today, and we expect to have them in the site sometime here in September. Another one told me, you have orders from us, but your trucks don't meet our needs. Now our trucks do meet their needs. Their needs are very specific. They want an 8,000-pound payload. They want 120-mile range. W56 can carry 10,000 pounds, and the range is 150 miles plus. The W4CC and the W750 do not meet those requirements. They can only carry 5,000-pound payload. They do have 150-mile weight. So it's basically customer-dependent. I'm confident that when we have these trucks, as they've told us, you get your trucks through the durability test and show us the test results, and bring us to the factory when you're actually doing production and not one-off builds, we'll be ready to start talking about orders. And so when people start asking me about what's your production plan for the balance of the year and 24 and 25, that tells me they're thinking about putting a big order for us, and we hope to land that. Also important for us is we're going to bring in a new national accounts director. He starts September 5th, someone I've worked with in the past. He's got deep relations, that 15 to 20 years, with over 40 to 50 of the major fleets here in North America. You know their names: FedEx, UPS, DHL, Frito-Lay, PepsiCo, Amazon, etc. Okay, so we're building the right sales team now that we have the right products.
Okay. Another question came in, Rick, and asked, why have you not had more luck getting contract manufacturing work like the current golf cart contract? You say other companies do not have a manufacturing plant. Can't you show them the savings inherent in your building their product?
Yeah, we're being very judicious on how we allocate our space. First and foremost, we take care of our own products first. W56, W4CC, W750, and then obviously the WNX in the future. So we have adequate space to produce four or five different versions of trucks. We took on the Tropos contract, and we think it has upside this year and next year. They've had some launch issues, specific supply chain issues in terms of getting the full bill of materials in the box or getting some quality issues there. We're most of those issues are behind us. The last 16 trucks we built went together almost flawlessly. They've really upped their order bank, and we expect to be ramping up to about 50 units a month. You know, the long-term target is to get that up to about 150 to 200 a month. That'll be a good business for us. So good money for us. We get paid for our labor. So we passed on two opportunities today. One was a class 1-2 vehicle, pretty significant volumes. We're taking up a large portion of the warehouse. We decided, no, we'd rather put the paint line there and use that for raw materials. That product also required complete homologation to U.S. safety standards in the class 1-2 sector. That would have taken about 18 to 20 months, and we didn't want to do that, okay? So we turned them down. They also want us to invest $25 million in their company. We said, no, we prefer to keep the $25 million in our company, invest in workforce. We have another opportunity that we are still in the running for. It's for a larger class 6 to 8 type vehicle. I won't say who it's with. We think we're down to one of the last two contract manufacturers considering. They chose to delay that sourcing for up to 12 or 18 months, which actually benefited us because it didn't distract our manufacturing team or our engineering team from what we have to do with the W56. If that opportunity comes our way, we'll have to consider how we deploy engineers or hire additional engineers or manufacturing people to handle it. We will not be the design requirement people, but we will have responsibility to localize sourcing. We have to run off those parts and to build the parts. We won't have the materials either. They'll be responsible for the materials. So it won't be a working capital issue for us. So, okay. Again, there's several OEMs out there in the EV space who have products, but they don't have manufacturing floor space. As I've told people countless times, you can't build a plant in 6 months or 12 months. It takes 2 or 3 years. So those who need to build products, if we think we can build it efficiently, we can find the right manpower, and we make money doing so, we'll take a look at it. If we don't have the people, we're not going to make money. It's going to be a distraction to our main programs, and we aren't going to do it. So,
all right. Rick, how many Green Power trucks are we shipping to customers?
Yeah, good question. As many as we can. So every vehicle we've shipped to date, it's almost, I think, and now we're up to about 80 or 90 have been Green Power trucks. So we're happy to have chosen Green Power as our partner. Together, we've had a lot of learning experiences. I can tell you our meetings sometimes are pretty tough, but we end up the day shaking hands and we go forward and solve the problems. What we have to find is those, get those 8-fit vouchers. That's really the opening for us to really ship a lot of those trucks over to the California area. So in terms of W4CC, we remember we had to ship those out to custom bodybuilders, and then they get outfitted out there. Those custom bodybuilders, we already have a strong relationship with the Pritchard family and do a lot of our custom bodybuilding upfitting for us to prepare to go. And so we have those build slots. When we added Smyrna trucks to our dealer network, now they're called ECV for dealers and Smyrna for trucks, they've got 700,000 square foot factory. They can do 100 trucks a week. They do 100 trucks a week. And they've opened up some custom bodybuilding for us. We have 30 trucks on the way down there right now that have bodies built on 12, 14, 16 foot boxes. That gives our sales team finished trucks they can sell rather than just sub cab chassis. On the 750, once we build those, we can ship those directly to customers. As we ramp up, we'll be able to sell those. W56 chassis, we'll have to put boxes on them ourselves. That's our primary source of revenue will be for W56, but we'll also have a few strip chassis. The way this industry works is the end customer decides which chassis they want and which box we want. One of the strategic advantages of Workhorse, we'll be the only company in the EV class 5-6 space that can build a full EV powered chassis and the cabin body. Everybody else in this space has to buy a chassis or has to buy a body. No one else does the whole thing. That should be an advantage for us from a material standpoint and from a cost standpoint in the marketplace.
Okay. If Workhorse is going to get a fleet contract for next year, wouldn't they have already signed the paperwork by now?
Not necessarily. The big truck guys basically look at their needs for next year. They're doing that right now. They're building their budgets for 2024, and they decide how much money they're going to allocate to do those purchases. So we should probably be able to sit down with those customers. Again, they're coming to our plant in September and early October. They get a test drive, new demos with our vehicles, sometimes for up to 30 days. I think the demo we're doing in the East Coast right now is a 2-week or 4-week demo. And I get an update every Monday from our sales team and our engineers in the meeting. We know how our truck's performing so far, so good. So I'd expect we should be in a position to land some contracts here in October.
Changing gears a little bit, why did Workhorse not try to sell the mail truck to other countries? The company had a truck that was designed and tested, and other countries have a mail service.
Yeah, that decision was made before I got here, but quite frankly, our trucks that we had didn't perform very well in the test data that I've seen. I think we had 5 or 6 trucks in the government. We got our hands on the test data, and our truck had some faults. Okay, when we the new leadership team got here, we decided, you know what, let's not pursue that Class 2 avenue. They've already awarded the contract to Oshkosh by then anyways, and we decided to keep our focus here on the last mile delivery workspace, okay? If the post office wants to come back in and either sell them W56s or get involved, you know, I do see that they're going to commit. They committed to convert 75% of the U.S. Postal Service fleet to EVs over the next 5 or 10 years. So that opportunity might come back. There's nothing for us to report on today.
Okay. So when do you expect the fleet contract for significant volumes for either trucks or drones?
Right? Yeah, I'd be disappointed if we don't have a couple of those contracts in hand by the fourth quarter of this year. So both on the truck and drone side of the house.
Okay. Last question in this category is, what is W Next? What is about it? What about it is next generation? Is it a vehicle for confidential special purpose? How important is it to the future? Projected share of production revenues of the development status?
Yeah, when we got here, and we assessed pretty quickly what we had when we got here in terms of products. We knew it wasn't capable of lasting 15 to 20 years out in the rugged environment of the last mile delivery space. We sat down and we looked at the benchmark of where the competitors were, what the customers wanted, and we sorted out we want the W56 first. Specifically, we want the W56 178-inch step van first. That's the biggest volume in the sector. We also then prioritize the 208, which comes next, and the 168. Those are the three main variants of the Class 5-6 step van that meet the needs of the big last mile delivery people. The W Next, which we originally called the W34, we've morphed that into the W Next. We think we're going to move more towards a Class 4 vehicle. We found a niche in the segment. with the green power vehicles that isn't served by other people. The WNEX will be a special vehicle. We're going to take some of the lessons learned we have from our old E-Gens that are still in operation, about 280 out in the field with about 9 million miles on it, low floorboard, and we're sorting out what kind of ADAS, the safety features, the lane change, et cetera, cameras in the front and back. And that product is earmarked for the Class 4 sector. It will replace the W4CC and W750, but it won't come out until late 25 or early 26. And to answer your question specifically, there's not for confidential special purpose. It's for a commercial purpose out in the field in a niche. These trucks will be a little bit more rugged and capable of higher payloads than a Class 3 that you have like a Transit or a Daimler Sprinter, and a little bit less costly and a little bit less cubic space than a W56.
Okay. Going to go to another category now. It's called EV demand and sales. First question in this category, when do you anticipate achieving qualification for HVIP vouchers on the W4CC, the W750, and the W56?
Yeah, that's the $65 million question in the room, right? And so that's the highest priority here at Workhorse, to go out and secure those vouchers. I hope we get that done. We're working two different channels, one through Green Power and one directly with CalSTART and CARB. Up to including the CARB director. So we'll hope to have that resolved very quickly. But we're on track right now for the W56. That's a manufactured vehicle ourselves. We got to finish up our EPA certification. We have all the paperwork. I know in the last week we passed brake testing. We've got the range certification. We've got almost every subsystem now 100% signed off. We'll just dot the I's, cross the T's. We'll submit our documentation and we'll get that voucher for the 23 model year for W56. One of the complications on the vouchers is because Green Power imports that truck called the EV Star, and we convert it into W4CC and W750. Green Power is the manufacturer of records, so they have the licenses and the vouchers. So we need to get those vouchers from them, or we got to get them directly from the car to allow us to do that. So that's what we're working on. So,
okay. We actually answered the next question, which was what happened to the HVIP vouchers on the W4CC and the
W750. Okay, good.
I'll move to the follow-on question then. Did Workhorse get the EV voucher program in all states? Did Workhorse get manufacturer certifications in all states?
Yeah, I think we've reported to you before. I think we have manufacturing license now in 23 states. There are 4 states requires to have a dealer before we can get our manufacturing license, submit our request for that. We're lining that up. We have 2 dealers groups that we're lining up that have dealer sites in those locations. I think we'll get that done. So we have the way to get vouchers in New York, New Jersey, which are critical. Texas, the only place we don't have right now is California. And I tell you, we have a lot of our leadership team here working on that. We have an outside legal team helping us work on that in California. We have dealers helping us work that in California, and we have Green Power helping us do that in California. It drives me crazy to know that we have customers that want to order EVs. We have dealers who want to sell those EVs. We have upfitters who are ready to upfit those EVs. And we have finished goods. And the only thing holding us up right now is administrative bureaucracy. So okay. Be careful what I say.
All right. Well, then we'll move to Bob for a couple questions.
All right.
Bob, who gets the rebates on these vouchers? Do they go directly to Workhorse, the retail dealer, or the end purchaser? And what about if a vehicle's leased? Who gets the how does that work?
Well, they don't go to Workhorse. The dealer's required to reduce the sales price of the vehicle by the amount of the voucher, and then it's reimbursed by HVIP. Once the dealer has assigned purchase order from the buyer, they will apply for reimbursement with HVIP. The vendor is reimbursed by HVIP at the time of delivery of the vehicle. In the case of leasing, the process works pretty much the same, except for the buyer, in this case, is the leasing company. This reduction will then affect your monthly lease cost.
Okay. And in that vein, Bob, what's the timeline for having some sort of boilerplate set up for all federal, state, and local government rebates? Needs to be exact and understandable and almost filled out when presented to the buyer, doesn't it?
Well, it's really between the dealer and the buyer, and it varies by state. Our dealer portal does include instructions, information for all of our qualified dealers, including eligible incentives.
Okay. Good. All right. Next bucket is aerospace for the drone business. So Rick, I'll ask you, why haven't you submitted a final paperwork for FAA certification? There were no updates provided during the recent earnings call by the aerospace division regarding certification status.
Yeah, so I refer to my notes on this one, Stan, because this is not my forte. So let me start by saying John Graber and his team, people like Mike Gerdes, combined, they have well over 100 years of experience working with the FAA. They're accomplished pilots. They've run big airlines. They know how FAA works, so I'm not. We're still participating in the FAA type certification process. However, the FAA has selected Workhorse Aero to participate in a program based on the Section 44807, Special Authority for Certain Unmanned Systems that the FAA recently revised and updated. The process allows OEMs to complete a thorough questionnaire and flight test hours, similar to Type 135 certification, but in an expedited manner. After submitting the completed questionnaire, providing our test results and documentation, the FAA will sign the 44807. We've had multiple meetings. Jonathan and the guys have had multiple meetings with the FAA for guidance and clarification of the program, and have begun the process to submit the 44807 with the goal of completing by the end of 2023 with the WA4-100, or what we call the Horsefly UAS. How's that? All right.
There you go. That's
sounds all. Like the government may be involved in the certification process.
It does. So when do you anticipate applying for the FAA certification on drones, and why haven't you applied yet, was a related question.
Yeah, it's typically taken some other people in the industry up to 4 years. We've already been in the process for up to 2 years right now. The 44807 will give Aero and our customers the benefits of documentation in a fraction of that time. So hopefully this year.
Okay. A more detailed question on the drones. With our drones being the only drones with a patented winch system rather than what other companies use, which are parachutes or drop-and-go style delivery systems, why is it that no other company that are using drones for delivery have reached out to us for our drones for their business? If it's the safest way to deliver a package and twice the weight of what everybody else can deliver, then why hasn't anybody bitten? Seems like a shoe-in.
Yeah, good question. That's a really good question. So we're really proud of our winch system. Not only can deliver a package up to 10 pounds, it can also pull that package back up 30 feet. And from an engineering standpoint, that's pretty crazy. I didn't think they could do it at first when I got here, but they can. They've proven it. So the winch system is what earned us the Valkyrie business. If you've seen the videos online or on Reddit, et cetera, basically the drone comes in, it hovers about the mailbox station, it drops the drone onto the location. The box is then centered, it goes down an elevator, it goes into a box where a customer can drive up and pick it up. Pretty sophisticated, and Valkyrie's extremely happy based on the 6 or 7 weeks they've been testing our system. We're working with another customer, and I'm not allowed to disclose who that customer is. They do have our drone, they purchase it. And we're the only drone company that they're working with right now for packages under 10 pounds. That company tells us they have about 5 to 10% of their overall global packages delivered that are less than 5 pounds, and we can figure out how to deliver that to houses with a drone. If with the FAA's permission, it'll be a game changer and reduce the delivery cost by over 90-95%. So there are unique locations in the country, as we said before, out in the country where it's a long way between farms or across riverways. We've got to go to a bridge, or a bridge gets backed up, you can deliver a drone much more efficiently than with a truck. They can deliver 5 or 6 more packages in 20 minutes than they can by doing it by truck with drone. So.
Okay. So a broader question, why continue with the aero business, Rick?
Yeah, I think there's potential in the aerospace business. I think I've been pretty upfront when I got here. I had some doubts about that. I went and met with people like UPS Flight Forward. I met with the government officials, and there's something here. We're in the very early stages. I'd say we're even in the preseason innings of the drone delivery space. And so I think there's going to be a marketplace for that. We see other companies that are doing that outside of the United States. We chose to stay here with our resources in North America. We also think that the opportunity to use the drones for scanning and with the government for multiple applications has real upside opportunity. We've seen multiple grants around that, multi-million dollar grants already, both at the federal and state level. So we think there's an opportunity to grow the business as the drones for a service, which is also good business for us.
Okay. Have you talked to Homeland Security about selling the drones to monitor the border?
We're in discussions with a number of government agencies. Some we're allowed to talk about, some we're not. But that includes Homeland Security about our drone capabilities. The DJI replacement is needed. DJI is a Chinese-made drone, the biggest drone company in the world. And there's been some states who outlawed the DJI. And so we're moving very quickly where that has happened to see if we can pick up that slack, and that could create some opportunities for us on the drone side.
okay? Workhorse has clearly shown an interest in selling drones to other countries and even built a new drone model to cater to specific needs of those that we're trying to sell, but no one's bitten yet. Why have we only sold two drones with all the events, demos, and use cases that have been presented? Is it flawed somehow, Rick?
No, we're very confident in our technology and drone capabilities. We've had some of the best drone people in the world and around the country come in and take a look at the drone, and they say it's a rock-solid design, both from a structural standpoint and from a software standpoint. The fact that it can go up to 10 or 12 miles, it can carry 5 to 10 pounds, and it can do so autonomously with no controls. Just you program the grid, and it goes and drops in. It's got a very set pattern. So very, very sophisticated technology, high-tech for sure. There's certain applications that will have to be customized. We're working with some customers on that, of what they want to see change. You know, some things we've done since I got here is that we got feedback. We want a parachute recovery system to control a descent if something happens to the drone. We need to have the winch not just drop a package down. It needs to be able to pull the package back up. But we want to be a flight time of 45 to 50 minutes out of every hour. Okay, you have to quick change batteries. We've accomplished all those engineering feats. I tell you, I give the engineering team and the pilot teams over at Aero, they are doing a great job. And we're ready. We just got to break through and get these orders, okay?
So, all right. Moving to the next bucket, which is about corporate governance. Bob, I think I'll throw this question to you.
Okay.
A lot of stockholders are asking for more transparency from Workhorse, including a periodic investor newsletter separate from earnings and ongoing investor communications updates. Would you consider this?
We recognize you follow us closely and want as much information as possible. We're committed to providing regular updates to the market. As we're sure you can appreciate, we've been focused on stabilizing, fixing, and growing the business. We've announced a number of recent milestones and achievements across our business and look forward to continuing to provide these notable updates to our stockholders. We also continue to look for ways to engage our stockholders and keep them informed and engaged in our growth and developments.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Rick, will the management team commit to buying more shares of Workhorse?
We don't force our manager to buy shares. As you can see from the proxy statement, our manager already owns stock, and their interests are strongly aligned with our Workhorse stockholders. I am personally, along with my wife, a meaningful owner of Workhorse shares. We have, like every public company, we have stock ownership guidelines, which are publicly available. We review them annually with the board of directors and our comp committee, and all of our executives are moving in the right direction to own the right shares of Workhorse stock. You know, I bought some shares at 310, I bought some shares at 187, so I feel your pain, trust me.
Rick, why should stockholders remain confident in current leadership given product delays and reduced guidance?
Yeah, okay, that's great. No one said the transition from being a technology startup to a full service OEM in the EV technology would be easy, and let me tell you for sure it's not, all right? We've had some hiccups along the way. We've shot quickly. We've had some lessons learned. We've addressed those. We had some unexpected issues on some of the trucks. We inherited some issues that we've addressed. I'm damn proud of our team. We announced the W56 launch about 3 months into my tenure here. We decided we had to pivot to a new product strategy. We had to hire a team. We really didn't start that product process until January of 22. Here we are 18 months later, and we're within 1 month of our original target for the W56 after having some engineering testing issues that we had to address with our suppliers. We pulled ahead the step van launch by 4 months when we started realizing the customers really want the step van, not just the cab, just the chassis, okay? So we're proud of that. Tell me anybody other company has gone from start to production in 18 months. Let me know, and I'll go visit and see what I can learn from them, okay? I'm proud of our team, okay? We had some difficulties with Green Power, which we have pivoted to bring in a class four truck so we at least have a product to sell in the marketplace. And together, working with Green Power and their supplier, we've engineered many advancements in that product. I think we're putting on 85 to 90 parts on the W4CC, to create the W4CC, over 700 parts on the W750. We did all that in less than a year, okay? And some of the guys have done Herculean tasks. We had some issues to get parts right done. Guys were driving their personal trucks down to and from North Carolina or up to Elkhart, Indiana. And that's the kind of commitment we have here at Workhorse to get the job done.
Okay. Different subject, same bucket. Will executive leadership and or members of the board of directors be receiving a reduction in compensation as part of cost-cutting efforts until the company is profitable?
Hey, unfortunately, I've had that experience in my life. First week, I became a VP at American Axle. The next week, there was a strike at GM, and the officers of the company took no pay for about 30 days. Got it. During the COVID, during the Great Recession, I was the first person at Acumen to reduce my pay 20% for almost a year. Now it's the last person to get my pay back. And we know what we had to do during the COVID period. So we understand, and that includes not just as executives of the company, but potentially board members. I've been on a board before of a company that had some struggles, and the board, along with the management team, reduced their pay for a short period until we get the company stable. If we have to do that, we can do that.
Okay. All right. And then the last category is something I'll call other. Bob, I'll throw this question to you. In 2022, Tesla made $1.7 billion selling their car credits to companies that sell ICE vehicles. Has Workhorse explored this income stream? If so, will Workhorse or Green Power be getting any credit for the Green Power trucks that we sell?
The OEM may be eligible to sell carbon offsets in one of several of the cap and trade programs. Green Power would be eligible for the Green Power vehicles. Workhorse has investigated the potential and will participate in these programs once the W56 is available in the public.
Okay. Bob, another one for you. Have you considered a Delaware statutory trust or sale and leaseback for Workhorse's manufacturing complex?
Well, we are exploring a broad range of financing options to best fund our operations and drive stockholder value. We have looked at these options and a number of others, but the fact is they would only go so far. We still need to authorize more shares to get financing and funding that we need to build a bridge to long-term growth and stockholder value creation.
Okay.
Can I jump in on that? I think, please. One of the great assets we have, we got here, we knew it right from the start, is our Union City facility. We've converted it into a world-class plant, and if we can do something with that on a sale lease back, it helps us finance the company to do so. But as Bob said, it's not enough. We need to do both the shares and something like that, Bob.
Okay. Rick, have you considered buying the Green Power school bus chassis and converting that to a Workhorse EV?
No, we have not. We are 100% focused on just a last mile delivery money. We understand what Green Power is doing there. We understand the money that's put forward in the infrastructure bill for the buses, but that's not something we're doing today.
Okay. Bob, this one I think is for you. Why doesn't Workhorse take a portion of its savings and invest in Bitcoin to make Workhorse the crypto play?
Well, no. Cryptocurrency is not one of our investment options. Our investments will be in the core business.
Okay. Last two questions came up, coming up, Rick, was if I already voted no, can I change my vote to yes?
The answer is yes, you can, and you should. All right? Please go to www.votewkhs.com for more information on how to vote and reach out to your proxy solicitor if you have any questions. If you can't, get that done, let us know, and we'll figure out how to do it with you. So, all right?
All right. And I guess the last question is the question that was kind of started. Why should I vote for the proposal, Rick?
Yeah. I think we're on the precipice of success here at Workhorse. The market shift to EV is coming. It's coming slower than we thought or anybody forecast, and we need your help to extend our runway to get there. If you look at the CARB rules and the clean fleet rules specifically, by 2030, 50% of all the class 4-6 step-van delivery vehicles will be EV. We are positioning ourselves to ride that wave. I've never been in an industry before where the government's had such an influence on what's going to happen in the industry going forward. 17 of states have already adopted those same CARB rules that will be rolled out in 2024 through 2030. And we're talking now on the I-5 corridor, the entire West Coast from Seattle to San Diego, the entire New York Metroplex around New York, New Jersey, from and all the way down from Boston to Washington, D.C. The federal government is committed to convert 100% of the fleets over to EVs. A large portion of those are right in our segments, okay? So it's coming our way. We've got to find a way to get there, and we need your help. That's why we're asking for a yes vote on the shareholder proposal. So,
okay. Actually, that concludes us answering all of the questions that came in from the shareholders. Well, I guess we conclude by saying we encourage you to vote now if you haven't done so to help us continue advancing the work, that significant work that's underway to create long-term value for our stockholders. The board of directors recommends shareholders vote yes, as well as the two leading proxy advisory services, Glass Lewis and ISS, also recommend voting yes. If you have any questions on how to vote your shares or need a telephone number on who to call to do that, then please visit the website Rick mentioned, www.votewkhs.com. and get your question answered. Reach out to our proxy solicitor if necessary, and they'll be happy to help. I want to thank you once again for your support and interest in Workhorse. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
Thanks, guys.